they're slightly contaminated. So the two main radioactive elements that we're concerned about mainly at Chernobyl, which is radioactive cesium and radioactive strontium. And the cesium was actually well below the Ukrainian safe limit, which is quite cautious. Well below that limit, the strontium was just a bit above in the grain that we grew within the abandoned area. But once we distilled it into grain spirit, a type of vodka, we couldn't find any Chernobyl radioactivity in the distilled product. So in the vodka that we made, because as we know that when you do distillation, most of the impurities in the grain stay in the waste product and don't get through into the final distillate alcohol.
So the process of decontamination is because you distillate it. Is it applicable for any other things or only for spirits?
That's a good question. I mean, lots of things are made from alcohol. You know, the perfumes and things are made from alcohol. You can make bioethanol, so biofuel potentially. But we chose spirits because we're interested in the economic revival of this area. So now we think that there are some hot spots within the exclusion zone at Chernobyl. So some areas are still very contaminated, but most areas aren't so contaminated. And so we think that a lot of areas could be reused, but we're trying to balance that as well, because the Chernobyl exclusion zone has become a very important nature reserve since the accident. It's probably the largest abandoned area in Europe. And so when the people moved out, the animals moved back in. And so there's many rare species in the exclusion zone, and it's been declared as a nature reserve, both the Belarusian and Ukrainian sectors. And so, you know, if we do begin bigger production, then we would be careful to balance that production with the needs of the nature reserve.
To be honest, the idea at all to make vodka in the contaminated area sounds very crazy. Where did the idea come from?
Well, I've been working on the Chernobyl accident for a long time. So I've been working since 1994 in Ukraine and Belarus. And before that in the UK, we had some fallout from Chernobyl. So I've been working on the science for a long time. But I've realized, and many colleagues have realized, it's well known in the scientific community that actually the radiation isn't the big problem in those areas affected by Chernobyl. The main problem has been the economic and social and psychological impacts of the accident. And so what we wanted to do was do something to try and benefit the local economy. So we haven't started full-scale production yet, but if we start production, we've created a community social enterprise in which most of the profits would go back to supporting those local communities. So we wanted to do something to try and benefit the local people who've been affected, not so much directly by the radiation from the accident, but from the social and economic effects of it.
Your logo is a wild boar. Why is that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Well, that was a photograph by a colleague of mine in Belarus, and the boar sort of, for me, represents this kind of resilience of the wildlife after the accident. So the radiation, it may be having some subtle effects on wildlife, but wildlife has really recovered from the accident in that abandoned area. And wild boar were the first large mammal species to really come back in terms of their populations. But also for me, it's sort of a bit of a symbol of resilience. The boar keeps on going, and that's what, after 30 years, we're still struggling as scientists and policymakers to try and improve the lives of people after the Chernobyl accident. And it's something that doesn't happen overnight. It's something that takes decades. And so it's kind of a symbol of that long struggle to improve people's lives in Ukraine and Belarus.
First, when I saw it, the vodka is called Atomic. It sounded for me like a really good publicity strategy, because a vodka and atomic is a very strong word for maybe very strong men drinking contaminated vodka. But you actually do it to help the social structure in the area, as I understood.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. I mean, the choice, it just seemed like the obvious choice of name for it. But also we wanted people to think differently about because Chernobyl's, you know, many people have seen the incredible Chernobyl drama, the miniseries, and, you know, we know about the tragedy of the accident and the horrific things that happened in those days and weeks after the accident. But we want people to think differently about the science of radioactivity, and because that's what we need to do. If we want to improve people's lives, if we want to have a sensible debate about potential contribution of nuclear power to climate change, then we need to focus on the science and what we understand about the science. So that was another thing. We want to get people to think a bit differently about how Chernobyl is.
Yeah, it's very much in the center right now because of this mini-series. That will be my last question. My colleagues told me not to ask you this because it's not so important, but I studied Russian culture and I was wondering how someone who put so much attention to this area would see the HBO series.
Well, I mean, I found it fascinating to watch, and I think that they've done an amazing job to recreate the events of the accident, and the historical detail is just incredible, and the sets I found it very, very emotional to watch it. But we have to remember that it's a drama and it's not a documentary, and so some things were dramatized, like the helicopter crash that happened during the efforts to cool down the core. That didn't happen. Other things didn't happen, and other things were suggested. Like, it was suggested that many people in Pripyat, the town next to Chernobyl, got radiation sickness, and that wasn't the official view of the World Health Organization. Was that's not correct. And so it was a drama, and then it was a very impressive drama. But we have to remember it was a drama and not a documentary.